Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Jane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience in enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, we're joined by Wagner Denuzzo, a leader with rich experience in human resources and organizational transformation at global firms like IBM and Prudential. This episode focuses on Wagner's insights into distributed team power and the shift away from traditional hierarchical structures. He explores how these changes foster a more dynamic and innovative work environment. Wagner discusses the critical role of diverse, cross-functional teams in driving value and the ways in which modern workspaces can better accommodate the realities of the future of work. Join us as we unpack Wagner's perspectives on overcoming workplace constraints to activate the full potential of the future of work, emphasizing creativity and collective leadership to enhance team effectiveness and organizational success. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we are here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Wagner Denuzzo. Wagner is originally a citizen of Brazil, and he's been doing some great work in the tech space. But he and I have just had a great intro conversation around teams and distributed power. So it's going to be a fun conversation. Welcome to the show, Wagner.
Thanks so much, Dane. I think we have alignment in how we think about the future. So this might help a lot of people.
I'm excited. I'm super excited. So maybe for the benefit of myself and the listeners, you could provide us a few minutes introduction into how you came to be doing this great work.
Sure. It's interesting because I talk a lot about the non-linear career pathways of tomorrow and today. But mine was like that. A long time ago, I came from Brazil as an immigrant. So I didn't have much resources, much guidance. And I started my work as a social worker, because I believed in the causes that I was purposeful. And I became an employee assistance program. I got to understand workforce dynamics, understand the business, the management of the business, how much we could talk about integration of mental health, emotional development, and leadership. So I became an executive coach, an HR consultant. And then I had the opportunity to work for IBM, a global company, and I was the leader of the leadership and management development. I did a lot of HR strategy transformations there on the strategy for the new HR. And then more recently, I was for four years at Prudential doing the future of work capabilities. So bringing all this together gave an opportunity to understand deeply what are the roadblocks to create the future of work, because the future of work is here already. It may not be activated as we wish, because we have several constraints that are more related to people than anything else.
Yeah. I love that statement that the future of work's here already. And I've had that conversation with a few guests around the fact that, you know, the future already exists. It just hasn't been embraced by as many people yet.
That's exactly it. And we are all co-creating the future, aren't we?
Yeah.
So the consciousness that I believe is emerging is a collective consciousness about collective leadership and creating a more collective ambition that will lead to a much better way of working, more fluid, more frictionless. We are just talking about, before we start this recording, about friction. I think we should talk about that.
Yeah, let's dive in. So you mentioned roadblocks, and before the show, we were talking about the belief that small teams can achieve more together, particularly when they're working across other teams, but it's hard to achieve.
Yes, and I love
that. Maybe we can...
I love that you use the word belief.
Yes.
That is an important piece here, because business, of course, we have numerous business models, operating systems, and actually operating models. We need to move to operating systems, because as I was observing research, a lot of MIT, you know, everywhere, they're talking about moving from the enterprise to the ecosystem economy. And that's true because ecosystems require you to build systems that talk to each other, integrate it, they can create more value. So if you think about value creation, it's not brain surgery, right? We know that teams, especially diverse teams, can create much more value because the opportunities for new information, new data, and new ways of doing things can create acceleration and create better designs, better development, and better deployment. We know that.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but there are frictions. So the constraints are many. One of which, I think, if you eliminate all the variables, of course, the forcing functions are interfering with the workplace. Of course they are. The global economy, the global, the global events. However, if you take those variables out, there's a critical issue with the hierarchical organizational model that we use for so many years that actually is failing us terribly. Because, as you said, distributed teams, because we are distributed, first of all, distributed teams require distributed power to make decisions closer to the client, to make rapid decisions about what they are about to do and create better ways of doing. So the hierarchical society that we live in right now is interfering with that. So there's a lot of friction between the layers in the organization. One thing that's interesting, I have to say, is the whole focus on efficiencies. Great.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we can be more effective. Not efficient. I think we can be more effective. Because efficiencies, think with me, lead with specializations. Because you need to be an expert. So if you're going to be very efficient, you're going to be siloed. And your siloed thinking is detrimental to creating organizational value because the cross-functional collaboration will create better value for you, for your clients, for your stakeholders, for everybody. So we are in a dichotomous world right now.
Yeah, it's really well put. And we had a guest, Michael McCarroll, on from Team Roderick, and we talked about how teams that focus on efficiency actually impact the effectiveness of the team. So his example was a pit crew. And he said, if my job is to get the tires on fast, I actually get in the way of my colleague who has to fuel the car. So we actually all need to step back from efficiency and say, what's the most effective way for us all to work together to get the car out on the track as quick as we can?
I love that analogy because, yes, we can be efficient if we have tasks that are potentially automated. So the automation would take care of those tasks that need to be so efficient that there is no margin of error and there is no margin for creativity. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about businesses who need creative inputs and insights to create what I call the organizational critical capabilities that give you competitive advantage. You can't create competitive advantage just through efficiencies. That doesn't work. You don't grow market share through efficiencies. No. You grow market share through value creation. It's a very different way of growing your business, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And from your experience, as you shared there in the introduction, Wagner, you worked for IBM, so a massive corporation that did lots of different things. But it seems like a lot of your learning and philosophy was crafted in that environment. So even big businesses need to be getting back to the value creation at a small teams level.
I was lucky. Well, lucky. I think what I say is teams is an act of composing, right? It's a composition. Mm-hmm. You don't build teams. You know, even when we say build feels like we are following a plan.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a composition. As an artist, you look at the potential, then you identify the colors, your palettes, the mediums, you start discerning. And that's the key word to me. The workforce of today are much more discerning. And actually, if I can give you these 5 D's, it would be helpful because in my book, I talk about the 5 D's of the new workforce. And it's true, they're distributed, no matter how you put it. They might be in different locations, maybe they might be in co-located environments, but they're working with partners. They're working with external people. They are distributed. They're dynamic. They're not thinking about years. They're talking about months. So when you think about major initiatives in your organizations, they take too long because the approval process go up and down and you dilute value through each stage. So they are dynamic now. If you allow the dynamic nature of work to happen, you're going to be ahead of everyone. They are also digital because digital natives, they are digital and the world is digital, especially with AI and technology and all that.
Yeah.
Diverse. You can get away. It's especially in the US. Demographically speaking, we are becoming more diverse. There's no way out. So why don't we accept, acceptance is a good word too, accept the reality that they are distributed, dynamic, diverse, digital, and discerning. People complain about the new workforce. Oh, they don't want to work. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. No, they're much more discerning about where they put their energy on. And yeah. I think that's fair. I don't think we ever had a population, the workforce, that had discernment and had all the access that they have to data and to information to make decisions for themselves. So yeah. All the influencers are in place. What we need now is curiosity and courage, because we need leaders now to take that step towards. And you say, I grew my knowledge at IBM. Yeah. I had the opportunity to create teams. I had the opportunity to go beyond what we had done before, because I work with the leaders who believe in creativity and innovation. Yes. If you don't have that belief, going back to belief, if you don't have that belief, you cannot trust a leader to allow and give you permission to do great things.
Yes. That's really fascinating the way you choose to land on that language, both the 5Ds, but also this need for acceptance and then belief, because then that creates what I would imagine is the trust, so that you can distribute the power and that you can let the teams self-form and self-perform.
I don't like to brag about what we did, but my team was amazing because I allowed them to give me feedback, instant feedback. We didn't have a hierarchical structure at all. I could be writing something. My two layers down could say, hey, I don't like that. That looks terrible. And I would say, hey, let's make it better. So when you allow people the famous psychological safety, right? Uh-huh. We can talk about that too. But that's a little too abstract.
I think
when you talk about friction, the friction is about giving people permission to do their best work and also give them guidance to manage themselves. In my book, Leading to Succeed, it's called Leading to Succeed because I truly believe in that. Every single person in your workforce is a leader. Because you lead yourself to self-management is really important for teaming, because your manager are not going to be observing your work. You're going to be cross-functional teams. So the manager is there to guide you, to give you career coaching and really help you be successful.
Yeah.
But you need to acquire that sense of agency. You mentioned agency before when we were talking.
Yes.
I love that because agency seems to be diluted in many organizations.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. And that's, I think, it's interesting. It brings me back to your point on curiosity and courage to give people agency, to distribute power. And you referenced before the show that a lot of leaders today are struggling with this fear of remaining relevant, because to them, the role of leadership is about hierarchy, reporting lines, budget authority, decision making. And so to now push that out into the teams, that they have to question, which I imagine is what you go deeply into in the book. How do they show up as a leader?
Yeah, it's you have to approach everything with the empathy. And I'm not discarding the difficulty people are having in understanding what's their new role in organizational leadership. I won't discard that, because becoming an executive leader of an organization is very complex. You have to think about everything. You cannot change the tires. Oh, going back to changing tires.
Yeah.
You cannot change tires while you're flying the plane or driving the car without really having a really important operating system in which you control some of the aspects of the business. The problem is that control seems to be expanding to areas that we don't need control. Because human nature, I'm a psychotherapist. I'm still licensed as a psychotherapist. I don't practice, but I think I do. secondarily. But when you think about that, the basic need of human beings is for safety and control for the environment and over our lives. So executives are having the same challenge. How do they maintain a sense of control of their reality and at the same time have a sense of safety and still giving permission to people to make decisions closer to the client? It's still giving that power to distributed teams. It's still believe that the teams that are not chosen by them are a composition of the best minds to create what they need to create. And with that comes the fractional workers, the external partners, external experts, the teams. So we are very erroneous when we think that our workforce is a composition of full-time employees. That is kind of absurd to me. Only the people in-house will take care of your innovation. Impossible. Think about the family unit. Do you think your family are the only ones in the neighborhood that knows where to buy stuff, where to do stuff, or you rely on a community? So let's talk about a community. And it's weird, isn't it? But it's true. We are building a community of experts, but they are not residing within your walls. Yes. And that's a really important concept.
It is a really important concept. And you shared, as we were prepping for the show, the work you're doing with A-Team. And the fact that they're already building a true community of builders. So maybe you could share that as a real life example of how the future already exists.
Well, as we know it, right? I don't like to quote data because there's so many numbers flying around, but there's a high number of people who have chosen to be independent workers, independent professionals. You can call them fractional, you can call them temporary, whatever you want to call them. But they are not your contractor of the earlier years. They're not coming to just a specific task because they have a specific skill. What you are doing is combining capabilities. So at A-Team, I love what they do because they allow the client to identify the best talent, compose the teams that are going to be complementing their in-house teams. So for example, you have an IT department.
Yeah,
that does not have the expertise of building AI or Gen AI on the cloud, and they need to automate things, they need to integrate things, they need to do a lot of things that they don't have in-house expertise. Mm-hmm. What happens is we are not denying the value of that team. What we are saying is let's complement your expertise and your value with this team of engineers, solutions architects who have been focusing on this. They not only come in and accelerate design and development and deployment, but they are building capability. That's what people need to understand. When you are sharing a space or a project or an initiative with experts from the outside, first, you can do it within a week or two. It's not like the 3 months that it takes to hire with six interviews, because let's be real, nowadays it's becoming ridiculous. People are asking candidates to do projects, and you see this on TikTok. Not that I follow, I do follow. I love TikTok because there's a lot of good things there. But you can see that, right? We are trying to be so specific and so perfect that this perfectionism is leading us to a really failure in organizing the right teams. So with A-Team, you can pick up a team in 2 weeks, bring them in. If you don't need them for after 6 months, you let them go or you hire some of them. But the idea is be fluid, be flexible, because the workforce of the future is not the full-time employee.
No, which is important. Again, going back to the word that you jumped on earlier, belief. If you're a leader today and you're running what is a more traditional in-office bricks and mortar team, then if you're responsible for the future of that team and your organization, you have to start believing and accepting and at least experimenting with these new compositions of teams, because otherwise you're going to get left behind. A lot of people.
Yeah. You will. You will, because I'm going to offer you an opportunity for leaders to have a dialogue with their HR people, their finance people, their marketing people, their procurement, We know procurement has become really rigid because there's a lot of regulatory agencies that are on top of them, especially in industries like finance, IT, and all that. We understand that.
Yeah.
However, the world needs to be cross-functional by nature.
Yeah.
So the collaboration is cross-functional.
Yeah.
And leaders can start talking about skills. We talk about this for many, many years, but skills as a currency. So it's not that we are identifying the experts to come in and solve our problems. So we are moving from the people that we are hiring to the skills that we are acquiring. So it's skills access, it's talent access. It's not talent acquisition.
Interesting.
It's from talent acquisition to talent access. It's a very different system of thinking about human resources, human capital management.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is. I like that. As someone who's grown up in the talent acquisition world, talent access makes a lot of sense. And we do see it. We see working examples of that every day where someone's paying for access to someone's expertise, insights, network. It isn't always a job skill.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because the whole HR world's talking a lot about skills-based hiring.
Yeah.
I think there's a short-sightedness in skills-based hiring. Directionally, it's correct. But to your point, it doesn't have to be hiring. It's skills-based work, it's style. There's more to it. We're oversimplifying it, I feel.
It's funny that we are talking about this right now because now we can go into the realm of the intangibles.
Yes.
The idea of talent capabilities. You know, we talk about organizational capabilities, which I think is fair for you to organize your thinking. Strategy, it's a really North Star, right? It's great to have a strategy, you need it because people get confused. But from a strategy to execution, you have to navigate capabilities. What are the critical capabilities you're trying to build to execute on this strategy?
Yeah.
So you think about technology, platforms, you think about the skills that you need, the capabilities, you think about the work design. Nobody's redesigning work. That's driving me a little nuts because no one is focusing on redesigning how work gets done. But we need that. And then we need to redesign the organization.
Yeah.
So if you build a capability with all these factors, accountability for all these factors, you are going to create a powerhouse team and the capability is going to be fluid and the capability is going to happen. I guarantee you. However, the intangibles, cross-functional teams and self-managed teams, they're not new, right? From the Agile Manifesto until now, it's been 20-something years. It's so long. However, self-managed teams, I think we need to upskill everyone. And I talk about this on the book. You need to understand your personal self-limiting beliefs. You need to understand your learned helplessness. This is interesting, but it's a little too deep. We don't need to get into that.
We should.
Because I talk about, let's talk about this. Challenge your lies. To be a really great team member, if a team is self-managed, is a group of experts who respect each other, trust each other, and are working on a collective purpose and shared goals, then we need to pay attention to how we behave in the dynamics of this team. And the dynamics of the team depends on your own ability to be aware, accept yourself, and take action. So you need to challenge these lies. L is for learned helplessness. Learned helplessness, and Martin Seligman from Positive Psychology talks about this. It emerges as a learned behavior because if you have been in a situation or been conditioned, then no matter what you do, you cannot change the conditions in which you live. Or you cannot change the outcomes, you start learning that's helpless to try. Think about the organizational. Think about in your organizations when you have brilliant people who had no opportunity to express their potential and they keep trying and they get rejected and nothing happens.
Yeah.
They start learning that it's helpless. We need to unlearn because humans are creative. Humans are like children. We are creative. Of course we are. We have to unlearn that behavior. That's one. I is for imposter syndrome. Of course you're going to have imposter syndrome in new situations in life. But what I'm saying on the book is you cannot let a natural reaction to a new condition to hinder your progress. So you cannot derail your career because you have imposter syndrome. We all do. You cannot grow your career without going to a challenging role.
Yes.
That you never did. How do you get the experience? By throwing yourself into that. But imposter syndrome, for some, are creating derailments because they get so anxious and they believe it is so deeply ingrained in themselves that they believe that they are a failure. Hmm. That's a terrible mistake. But anyway, and then you have, there's two more. There's the external expectations that you have to be perfect, that you have to be the leader of the team, that you have to show up, that you have to show off, that you have to be the leader of the idea. So all these expectations from above, from behind, and from yourself. And then the last S lies. S is for self-limiting beliefs. As an immigrant, I always tell this story because it's true. I grew up in São Paulo, Brazil. My family didn't have any money. I went to high school at night. Who goes to high school at night? I went to high school at night, college at night, because I had to work. I had no money. The education was really not great.
Yeah.
So I developed self-limiting beliefs. My accent's not going to allow me to be a professional in the U.S. I had no English. So not having English, I'm not going to be more than a waiter or a busboy, because I was a busboy after college. And then the other self-limiting beliefs is my education. I had no education. In comparison to Americans and Europeans, I felt like I have no chance.
Yes.
But those are all self-limiting beliefs. Look at me now. You know, I made it. Somehow I made it. But those self-limiting beliefs, you need to pay attention to them. So awareness is not enough. You need awareness, self-acceptance, because you need to accept that those things exist. The flaws, the mental models that we have about ourselves, self-limiting beliefs, you have to accept that and then take action towards what you really want to become. And that's what I did. I went to therapy. I became a psychotherapist, but you need to deal with that. If you don't deal with that, the team dynamics are as such that you are replicating your family.
Yes.
This is deep, but you replicate your role. What role did you play in the family? Look at the teams that you are in. You probably played the same role unconsciously. So we need to raise that consciousness about how you manage yourself in a team environment. That's really important, I think.
I hadn't heard lies before, but I think that's a fantastic framework. And I think you're right. Everyone suffers from those...
Everyone.
Let's call them challenges and obstacles.
Yes,
there isn't anyone that I've ever met that hasn't got them.
Yes, I agree.
That's neat. And you talk in your book about developing a personal success profile.
Yeah.
So does that kind of determining, as you put it, awareness, and
acceptance
then
and action.
Acceptance and then action, does that kind of lead into the personal success profile?
The personal success profile, of course, it becomes personalized because you need to take in consideration of all these three A's, right? The awareness of who you are, where you came from, and all this. Then you need to understand that you are leading your life professionally. You are leading yourself. So you need consciousness. I call the three C's, right? The consciousness, curiosity, and courage. But hold your horses, right? Don't need to do everything at once. But consciousness, it speaks to something that's really important. Your personal brand, your personal profile requires you to be to have confidence. Confidence is not about knowledge, it's about having the belief that you can learn. Hmm. But beliefs are really important because you might have acquired beliefs from your upbringing, from your communities, from where you have been. You need to challenge that.
Yes.
What are your true beliefs? What is your true values that is going to guide you through all this? That's consciousness. This consciousness is emerging, I think, collectively, because we are really becoming much more discerning, like I said. So that's important. But the personal success profile is beyond that. That's just to prime you to become a leader that you want to become. Because curiosity goes to diversity. How do you deal with people if you're always judging them? If you're judging yourself and judging others, you're really derailing. You know, it's very hard because it's a natural reaction, isn't it? We judge people less than
survival.
Right. It's survival. It's almost unconscious. We immediately judge people when we look at them. And we judge ourselves. So that's a big trigger for me. We need to understand these triggers. Emotionally, we need to understand. But the personal success profile, going back to that, I think there are five skills. It's funny because I use the acronyms. I think it must be the IBM tradition of acronyms. Cards. If you play your cards right, but you show your cards with transparency, authenticity, and courage, you can be successful. C for cognitive mastery. Cognitive mastery is exactly all this, to be able to understand your triggers, to understand what are your reactions to the world, and you can transform these reactions to purposeful responses. But like Viktor Frankl always said, there is that space that you have to manage that, because that's your freedom and your growth, as he says, when you respond according to your values, your beliefs, and you're aware of it. So cognitive mastery is beyond emotional intelligence, you know. And first of all, I think emotional intelligence is misguided a little bit, because intelligence by nature are fixed. It's intelligent. Your IQ, yeah. EQ, I don't think EQ is fixed. You know, I think the only thing fixed might be your biological set of DNA and whatever that made you intelligent or not intelligent. But I think that's kind of BS anyway. Anyway, cognitive mastery. You have to have this mastery of awareness, acceptance, and action. But then you have to have adaptive resilience. People come to me and says, I am who I am. People have to accept me. Think of you being blunt in a team environment. You need to understand the conditions. Context is everything. In my life, I think context is everything. Mm-hmm. You need to understand where you're coming in, the situation. Being authentic is not about being the same everywhere you go. People say, oh, no, you have to accept who I am. Bring my whole self to work. That's another one that we need to discuss. Because if I bring my whole self to work, I will be the neurotic self about cleaning this, cleaning that. Because at home, we're all neurotic, right?
Yeah.
We're all neurotic. It's nature.
Yeah.
Don't bring all yourself to work, please. I don't want your neurosis in the workplace. But anyway, bring your diverse dynamics, your dimensions. I'm not saying that. I love everybody who comes as their real selves. But don't bring your whole self, just your real selves with adaptive resilience, which I mean, you are resilient because you had the experiences of overcoming challenges and helping others do the same. However, you don't act the same in each situation. If somebody's mourning the loss of someone, your resilience is not about the capability of empathy. Okay, yes, it is. But if somebody else is dealing with a failure at work or frustration, that's a different set of situations. So adaptive resilience talks about be resilient, authentic, but adaptive to the environment.
Yes.
Right? And then the other one people forget is reciprocity alignment. Reciprocity is so important. People don't take reciprocity seriously. I take what I can, and I'm always trying to get something for myself. And then I give a token. For example, you invite me to your podcast. Oh, now I have to invite Dane to my podcast. No, that's not reciprocity. Reciprocity alignment is aligning the employee to the employer, us with our leaders, with each other, and aligning towards understanding what's important to you. Yeah. My reciprocity alignment is about understanding what's important to you and being grateful for what I get from you. That's reciprocity alignment and understanding how you enrich each other's lives.
Yes.
Then you have the digital fluency. That goes without saying. We all need digital fluency. Without that, you're going to succumb to very bad behavior.
Yeah.
And then the last one, which I really think is important, sense making. We are involved in so much. There's so much coming at us. Howard Gardner always said, synthesizing all this is important, right?
Yeah.
Synthesizing mind. How can you create a synthesizing ability? Sense making is perceiving the signals, perceiving what's happening. I remember in 2007, I closed my private practice because I sensed that the downturn was coming. I don't know. There were signals across.
And they're out.
Oops, I better get a job. And I got a job at IBM. That was perfect timing. Because you need to sense make is a really good skill to have. Understand disparate signals and information, putting it all together. So making sense of the world that we live in is essential. So this card is your personal success profile. And I truly believe you can build it. If you build those, no matter what you choose to do, I think you're going to be very successful.
Oh, highly successful. And if you have those, you're probably going to do a great job of composing excellent teams.
And be a great leader.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I like that. And sense making is so critical. That's a word and a phrase that I've come to love. Probably the last 3 years, I've been exploring that whole shift from enterprise to ecosystem. Yeah. And when you explore ecosystem, then sense making is one of the most critical survival skills, because everyone has different language, different ways of describing and tackling problems. So the only way you can really find your people and find ways to create value together is that if you're in a constant state of sense making.
It's exhausting. Let's be real.
It is.
It's exhausting. I'm not saying it's so easy, but it's a much more satisfying way of putting your energy into something that actually can create an outcome that you're proud of. I keep thinking about, at the end of this whole thing, if you're proud of what you've created and what you've done collectively, I think there is no better feeling, you know?
Correct. And it's a gift for the future generations.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is a beautiful thing. Exhausting is a great choice of words too, because I've been on a busy mission. I mean, that's why we started the podcast, and it's exhilarating, exciting, and exhausting. And I think in acknowledging that exhaustion factor, and we're all living in a world with a lot of burnout and fatigue, making that sense making and exploration a team effort is powerful too, because it's not just one person and their perspective going out and sense making. You're doing it as a team or as a team of teams.
It's never a single sport. However, challenging your lives is an individual sport.
Got it. That makes sense.
You know, because you have to explore without the social media representation, without the comparisons, because it's an individual experience. What has been your individual experience growing up in building who you are?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you're static. You're going to become who you want to become. But who you are today is a very introspective reflection that you need to go through. And it's not easy. You talk about friction. You know, I don't want to miss this one, because I always think that friction hinders progress. Friction does. Mm-hmm. But tension creates opportunities for creative outcomes.
Yes.
Business tensions just allows you to make sense of the multiple realities. It's different. Friction is about interruption and resistance.
Yes.
To open up to new opportunities. Tension creates new opportunities, because tension is going to force you to think about alternatives to what you're thinking, because there are multiple realities out there and you can't deny it, you know?
Yeah. I like that. I also like the word irritation.
Irritation, yes.
It's irritating, but it's not always going to be there because I'm going to scratch it or I'm going to move past it or whatever it is. It's more dynamic.
But you have to be aware of that, right? Dynamic is a good word, isn't it? I tell HR folks, in the future of HR, we need to create a dynamic talent strategy. Dynamic means internal mobility, allowing people to do this, to do that. Allow them access to information that they didn't have. Now they have access to what they need to do, the gap in their skills, how to bridge that gap. All this has to be self-motivated and self-orchestrated.
Yeah.
And the managers are there to guide you and help you. But you see, I think we hide important information from people and then expect them to behave accordingly.
It
doesn't work that way. Give access to people, transparency, and people will make the right judgments for themselves.
I agree.
Think it's a great way of building organizational culture too. Think about it.
It is.
You know, it's not the paternalistic culture, but it's not a very hierarchical culture either. It's a culture of access, transparency, and agency. I love that you said agency in the beginning when we talked, because agency is important.
It's super important. We had Andre Martin on the show recently.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a great author and speaker on ways of working. And how you show up and practice your craft. Yeah. And in his book, he talks a lot about how the culture deck and kind of stating what our culture is, yeah, is a bit dangerous, because you're dictating to people how they should show up, how they should behave, how they should do their work, rather than allowing it to be more organic, give them agency and kind of see how culture forms and evolves over time. I think that's interesting.
And I love the word. I love this word. I use it all the time. Let culture emerge.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's an emerging dynamic process. You don't create culture. Oh, we are focused on creating culture. Oh, yeah. Culture work. It's like, culture work? What is culture work? I think, yeah, if you do people work, the culture emerges. You
know? I like that. I like that. People work to culture emergence. I'll probably borrow from that.
Yeah, go ahead.
So sort of playing back, there's a big question I've got for you, and it ties into your coaching background too. You know, playing back this whole concept of collective consciousness, removing the friction of leadership, creating distributed power for teams, doing the personal work. All of those themes are going to require very intentional and consistent change at the individual level before the team level. So yes, we're seeing, even in this economic cycle, this increasing demand for coaching. I don't think there are enough coaches or therapists out there to help everyone move through this change right now. But if you're an executive leader, a shareholder, an HR leader, and you want to bring your leadership team into this new way of working, how are you seeing coaching play an impactful role in that process?
You know, it's interesting that you're talking about this. I'm afraid that coaching is becoming commoditized, but that's just me. Because think about this, you know, I advise coaching firms, and it's not a criticism of the coaching companies, because they're good, they're great, they're amazing, actually. I was at BetterUp conference, I advise ASAP, I think they're fabulous. But then I was thinking, think with me, maybe you can challenge me.
I'd love to.
If you're focusing on cultural development in your people, when you give individuals coaches, you are isolating the members of your organization and your workforce in one-on-one, what I call intimacy. Mm-hmm. But the intimacy is being built with external individuals.
Yes.
I prefer to bring them in-house, create the conditions in which people feel safe enough to start sharing their intimacy a little more. Mm. And I did that at IBM. Coaching circles is becoming a much more powerful, I think, activity. Coaching circles, you create the norms of the team, which helps in teams cross-functionally. You see, you have to play out within the same spheres that you want the business to play. Putting people in one-on-one situations, therapy works beautifully because you can challenge those lies. That's great.
Yeah.
But if you're creating culture, you don't create a coaching culture by putting people in isolated dualities. Mm-hmm. You don't.
Yeah.
Because then the intimacy is lost.
Yeah.
If they're not sharing with each other, they're sharing with external members of their trusted community. So what I'm saying is, coaching circles and team coaching has emerged as the next wave, because I have been part of team coaching, C-suite coaching, for example.
Uh-huh.
It's wonderful, because then you can focus on alignment. Then you can focus on the tensions between the businesses. Then you can focus on the real matter of what they're trying to build in terms of capabilities. And you can foster the environment of collaboration and all that. So team coaching, I think, is next. Next, no, it's already happening.
And it's just going to become expanded.
Yes, and coaching circles becomes your learning methodology.
Yeah.
Think about learning as a cohort. Oh, yeah, we put in cohorts, but one stops, the other goes, the other stops, and nobody finishes, and nobody has accountability for anything. It's becoming very difficult. Learning and development is becoming something that we need to revamp because they are not yielding the value that you want. Because think about yourself. And I ask people who are listening, when was the last time you sat by yourself and focused on a journey, a learning journey by yourself online, and you retained at least 50% of what it
is? No chance.
I doubt it. Now, in coaching circles, you have small dosages of content. Each session, one person might lead the coaching environment. Everybody has a chance to lead. And you discuss topics that are relevant to your context. Mm-hmm. So content, context, and curation are really important. I love the C words. There's so many C words: collaboration, connection, community. I love
them.
I think there are more C words that we need to explore than any other word letter in the alphabet, by the way.
Isn't that interesting?
It is, because I made a list of 50-something the other day. I said, okay, fine. But this is not to say that we need to also train ourselves to seek information, knowledge through AI. AI is there, is available. Yeah. It's an open source, fabulous, what we call collective intelligence. Is our collective intelligence at your fingertips? Use it.
Yeah.
Chances are you're going to learn so much. That's the learning. So how you learn? You learn with people, challenging what you learned and repeating, because you need to teach what you learn. So coaching circles with a little dosage of curated content and your own curiosity on ChatGPT and other sources creates the environment where you can do it. Now, applying the knowledge is another thing. That's why we need a dynamic talent strategy. We have to establish that people have not only access to learning, but they have access to opportunities to apply.
Yes.
So we have to stop this thing. People have to stay in the same role for 6 months to a year or 2 years. Stop all that. There is no limit, and that is not soon enough. What there is hunger for knowledge, hunger for growth. You can grow if you go through these initiatives, cross-functional teams, gig economy. All this needs to become part of our daily life at work.
Yeah.
And HR has to step up, because the annual cycles of performance management, the annual cycles of talent identification, the 9 blocks, that is just making people feel a little more comfortable. I say one more thing. I'm talking about
this. No,
really,
I love
helpful.
This.
This is really helpful, because AI, I think there was a research, I don't know if it was MIT or Harvard, but I heard this research and I read, and I believe in that. Why CEOs are a little frustrated with people not adopting AI? Because we found that psychologically speaking, people want to contribute. That's why they go to work. That's why they have jobs.
Yes.
They want to contribute. And they gain a sense of contribution through completing tasks that they know how to complete. So even when tasks could be totally automated, people are choosing
they still want to hold
keep
it.
Because they know how to start, how to resolve, and how to complete it. That gives a sense of completion. We all love that, right? Completing something. When you scratch that off, we all love that. So we need to understand the psychology of things. Mm-hmm. So with AI, we need to understand that that's a challenge that we need to overcome. And we need to create rewards and recognition for people who try to be creative about their learning and their value creation. But until then, we need to understand how psychologically not everybody's there yet, you know? But I think
so.
ChatGPT and you know, Claude and Pi. Have you seen Pi, P-I?
I haven't, but
it's really cool because it has empathy. I wrote and said, hey, I don't know how to do marketing for my book. What are your ideas? Congratulations on your book. That's an achievement that not many people have. You must be proud of yourself. That was generative AI being empathic.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It's amazing. So there's so much we can discuss, but I think people need to be curious and courageous enough to make those decisions. That's my philosophy, at least.
I love it. This has been such an energizing conversation, Wagner. I think you and I share a lot of philosophy. I think you've just described a number of really important tools and systems, not models,
systems
for bringing teams together to be courageous, to be curious, to build new ways of working, to build that value, create that value. Yeah. And that's an exciting hope
it's
for
happening.
The future of teamwork. It's happening. And,
right?
and
it's happening.
Wouldn't it be great if more of us get to turn up in those teams every day?
Yes, I'm very optimistic. I'm very optimistic because I mentor a lot of newcomers into the workplace.
Yeah.
They're amazing. I don't let anybody badmouth generations because, first of all, generational silos don't work. Stop categorizing people in generations. I'm from a generation that I don't see myself in, to be honest, but there's no such barrier. Let's talk about the cross-generational environments that we are creating. And it's very individual, you know?
It is.
You
it
choose
is very
to create your reality. So, but thank you so much. I love talking to you. Thank you so much, Dave. This
was fun. Thanks, Wagner. We'll do it again soon. And for any of our listeners that want to find your book or your consulting practice, how do they best find you?
Hey, that's easy. My name is not that easy. Wagner Denuso, right? WagnerDenuso.global is my website. But my book, It Is What It Is, Leading to Succeed. It's available on Amazon and you can get it. Leading to Succeed. I hope people enjoy it.
I'm sure they will. Lots of great stuff. Well, thanks again for your time and I look forward to collaborating soon.
Thank you, Dane. Take care.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,